WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, in for Terry Gross. The new documentary, The Wrecking Crew, tells the story of what may be the most successful group of studio and session musicians in music history. This anonymous collection of players can be heard on many hits of the 1960s and 70s. Songs by such artists as the Beach Boys, the Byrds, Frank Sinatra, Leslie Gore, the Mamas and the Papas, the Monkees, and Nat King Cole. The musicians were used by music producer Phil Spector to create his wall of sound. Our next guest, drummer Hal Blaine, is featured in the documentary and is credited for coming up with the group's nickname, The Wrecking Crew. In March 2000, Hal Blaine was one of the first five sidemen inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He's featured on thousands of records and over 40 number one hits. Terry interviewed him in 2001. They started with one of his hits from 1963. That year alone, Hal Blaine played on Then He Kissed Me, Da Do Ron Ron, Another Saturday Night, Surf City, Surfer Girl, Surfin' USA, and this record, which has one of rock and roll's most famous opening drum lines.
Hal Blaine, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you very much.
Now, is the opening on Be My Baby, was that drum line your idea?
This was the beginnings of rock and roll. Somehow, with my experience, I keep thinking that I was an awfully good faker. And it could be that the lick went boom, 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 with a backbeat. Boom, 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 boom. Boom, boom. And at one point, while we were rolling, I may have missed the second beat. So we went boom, 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 and it stuck. It became a hook, and of course, one of the most famous hooks in rock and roll. That also happened to me, just to get off the beaten track. It also happened to me with the Tijuana Brass when we did A Taste of Honey. The song da 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 da, and everybody comes in da da, ba da da. Well, unfortunately, nobody was coming in together. It was like a train wreck. So at one point, me and my comedic mind, they went ba da 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 da, and I looked at the band and I started slugging with my bass drum. Boom, 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 diddle 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 diddle. Everybody came in. And once again, that became a major hook for that song. It happened to be my first record of the year.
Why don't we hear that part you're talking about? Blaine, what are some of the other records that had the most memorable beats that you played?
Well, I remember doing a record with Sam Cooke, Another Saturday Night, it was called. And that was another one with that same drum lick, every 8 or 16 bars, whatever it was. dig 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 dig. And all these drum licks kind of became the standard for rock and roll. You know, all the drummers that I've spoken with through the years have told me that they grew up listening to the records that I played on, and that's how they learned. And I grew up listening to Gene Krupp and Buddy Rich, and that's how I learned.
In fact, I bet you've been to countless restaurants where people have been playing your rhythms on the table.
That has happened, I guess, in the past. You know, sometimes I've actually, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. I've actually turned around to someone and said, do me a favor and let me play the drums. In a nice way.
Right.
Where I would explain to them that they were trying to play their fingers along with whatever the music was playing, coming out of the speakers in the restaurant. That actually has happened to me, which is kind of funny that you would hit on that.
Now, you did a lot of records with Phil Spector, including Be My Baby.
Yes.
What are some of the things he had you do that other session heads didn't? What was different about working with Phil Spector?
Well, first of all, every Phil Spector session was a party. Everyone on the session, all the guys and girls, were the first call people. Everyone wanted to work with Phil Spector because they knew that some kind of a hit record, I mean, it was the talk of the town. Phil Spector was the guy that everyone wanted to see how he worked. He had a big sign on the door that said, closed session, and yet anyone who stuck their head in, he'd grab them and he'd shove them in the studio and he'd say, Hal, give them a tambourine or a shaker or some clavies, some noisemakers, let them play something.
Did Spector hum for you or clap for you the kind of things that he wanted, the sound that
not,
he wanted?
Not for drums. Phil used to use me like a racehorse. He would have me sitting there while he rehearsed. He would keep me from rehearsing, and I'd be chomping at the bit I want to play. And finally, he would point to me. He used to be in the booth, and he'd run back and forth. They had a huge window, and he'd run back and forth like he was conducting a symphony. And he'd look at the strings and use certain, you know, symphonic movements or the way a conductor would do. And he would look at me, and he would say, now. And I knew he was saying, now, which meant go for it. And I guess I used to go nuts sometimes on those drums, because if you listen to some of the fade endings on just about all those records, we used to go into double times and all kinds of things that were not unheard of on records. And everybody would go wacko. And then there was a time when Phil threatened to put out a record or an album of all the fades that we did. And the fades, if for those who don't know what a fade is, it just means when you hear a record playing and it gets to the end and it gets softer and softer and softer and softer and it's gone. That's called the fade. With Phil, it went on forever. And finally, when everyone had had enough, and I always kind of had that feeling I knew when it was, I would go into my quarter note triplets against whatever was being played.
Clap a quarter note triplet for us.
Well, in other words, it's over, and I go da 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 da. So everyone knew, here it is, this is it. And Phil would never stop the machine until I played those quarter note triplets. So they're on the end of every record.
The musicians who you used to play with on rock and roll sessions were known as the Wrecking Crew. Why were they called the Wrecking Crew?
In the late 50s, we started playing rock and roll, and a lot of people said it was a dirty word. They didn't want to hear that kind of music. They thought the musicians were just rank amateurs. They had no idea that we were all well-learned and studied musicians with degrees and so forth playing music. And the old-timers, the guys that we kind of replaced, used to say, these kids are going to wreck the business. And I just automatically started calling us the Wrecking Crew. And then I became a contractor very early on, doing the hiring for the sessions that I was playing on. And I just started, you know, people would call me and they'd say, get your crew together. And I'd say, okay, the Wrecking Crew, here we go. And I'd make calls. Eventually I had a secretary who made all my calls and so forth. So the Wrecking Crew stuck.
Drummer Hal Blaine, member of the Wrecking Crew, speaking with Terry Gross in 2001.